It is Thursday, May 16th. I am Andy Behrens. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to, you know what? I'm not gonna step on Matt Harmon's line. It's always a really good day to talk ball because, you know, it's a Thursday in America, so it's a good day to talk ball. It is perhaps a seasonally inappropriate time for the NFL to be occupying a huge chunk of the news cycle, but whatever, we'll get to that in a second. I am joined today by Dalton Del Don. That's really fun. Matt is, of course, sipping tropical drinks on his honeymoon, staying very far away from the NFL schedule release because he knows what's up. Dalton, how are you? It's been a while, man.
Andy, what a pleasure. We were potting back in the day, hoops, years and years ago. It's been a while since we've got to talk, so I'm looking forward to this, especially looking forward to it since schedule release is your favorite time of year. So it's fortuitous.
Yeah. It is, in fact, not my favorite time of year. I'll intro it this way, right? Like I feel like the first and most important thing that people need to understand about NFL schedule release day, woo, is that it is a marketing scam. It is a pure marketing scam. Shout out to whichever marketing genius with the league actually concocted this nonsense. You should be the next commissioner of the NFL. Here's the thing about schedule release day, which is, of course, now a tentpole event for the NFL. Literally every matchup in the 2024 season, home and away for each team, was known and was announced via press release 4 months ago. We knew this stuff in January, Dalton. The league just re-released the same info with dates attached on Wednesday, at which point the entire NFL world pretends that something new and exciting has dropped. All these outlets release their strength of schedule analysis, which, of course, they literally could have written months ago. They probably did write it months ago. We got people publishing winners and losers articles in May on matchups that we knew about in January related to games that won't be played until October, November, December. I really do hate this scam. It is a breathtakingly audacious repackaging of old information that we treat as breaking news. It's brutal. At least we have the Titans and the Chargers social media teams to make this whole thing tolerable. I appreciate them. As soon as I heard that we were planning a special schedule release podcast, I texted producer Colin and I told him, man, I can't do it. I am not your guy for this. I consider it a ridiculous marketing event with no actionable information, and I can't fake my way through a podcast about it. And then Colin said, Andy, after the way you exposed my fraud of a mock draft team last week, you are definitely going to be on the hook for this. So here I am. Here we go. I did tell Colin that my intention was that I was just not going to even pretend to care about the re-release of schedule info, and that I would not prep this show in any meaningful way. Man, every other major sports league is actually in season right now, and some of them are like deep in their post seasons. I got no time for the NFL's marketing nonsense right at this moment. Anyway, Colin said, fine, how about you just come up with some questions that need answering for each NFL team, or at least like 10 burning questions across the NFL. And then Dalton, of course, being one of the schedule release sheep who cares about this, Dalton will tell you when exactly these burning questions will be resolved. So here we are. Please, people, if at any time during this podcast I appear to be enthusiastic about anything related to the NFL schedule, please know that I'm faking it. It is inauthentic. I can't believe that I am an accomplice to this particular NFL grift, but Dalton, at least I get to do it with you, buddy. I hope that schedule day was good to your Niners.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I agree with your premise here. I understand. But there are a few exceptions. Anyone going to games can now plan ahead. There are a couple survivor sickos like myself who can now, I mean, I will embarrass, plan, take a night out and just spend an embarrassing amount of time planning ahead. Now, survivor, which I cannot do without the actual schedule, and best ball sickos as well, you know, looking at that week 17 correlation and dome games and all that. So there's definitely a niche out there that this fundamentally matters, but I hear you, and it is a marketing ploy, and some of those marketing ploys worked well. You know, like you said, the Chargers team was very funny, but yeah, we can turn this into fantasy too, though. You know, I generally started this exercise thinking the same way as you, but when you sent me the questions, you know, I actually learned some things going through the schedule last night. So let's get to it.
Okay, good. That's good to hear. And I do want to say, like, I've been a ticket holder for various pro teams, and so I do understand it. Like, you've got a ticket draft coming up with people, and you're going in on a package together. I totally get it. It's meaningful to you. You're a member of the media. You've got travel arrangements to book. I get it. Best ball, understand it. But for the most part, man, this is just the NFL taking oxygen away from other sports when they are reaching their zenith. Whatever. I've got my rants out of the way. And again, man, the Titans social media team crushed it. The Chargers social media team giving us Harrison Butker in the kitchen. Just absolutely chef's kiss stuff. Tremendous work by them. So for the social media teams, it's like, this is like their Super Bowl outside of the actual Super Bowl. So good for them. But I did come up with 10 burning questions that I think are pretty legit. And it's not gonna surprise you, Dalton, where I want to start. I will also say, like, the one place where I do kind of, you know, I'm old man raging about the NFL schedule release, which, by the way, we didn't even have back in the day. This is a new thing. The one thing that I do peek at is when the Bears play the Packers. So my first burning question to you is, at what point in the season will I be able to officially say definitively that Caleb Williams is in every way superior to Jordan Love? And I, like, we don't even have to make it about the Packers, right? But, like, at what point in the 2024 season can I, you know, what is the game that I can circle and say, okay, this is when this Bears offense really has to have it together? Because I will tell you that, like, one of my concerns about the Bears offense, and I love all the individual pieces, right? Huge Williams fan, huge Adunze fan, and I know you are as well. Like, I love everything they've done in the offseason. This is a lot of new stuff. And we often say, you know, the NFL is a continuity league, right? And the Bears don't have it. New OC, new quarterback, couple new receivers, new tight end. We got a new running game. Like everything's new. So, at what point, like, what's the game that I should circle on the calendar and say, okay, that's when I'm really going to learn something about this Chicago roster?
All right, sure. As you talk through this, maybe it made more sense to pick a game later in the season, and at Detroit and Thanksgiving would have been a good one, but I just went early because delayed gratification sucks sometimes. Week 2 at Houston, Sunday night football. Oof. It's a primetime game. And I also just wanted to highlight the early season with the Bears. Chicago has the easiest strength of schedule through the first 10 weeks of the year. 5 of their first 8 opponents finished top 10 or bottom 10, however you want to look at it, allowing the 10 most fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks last year. So it's a good setup early for your guy, Caleb. But week 2 against Houston, that Texans, first of all, it's awesome, you know, matchup between Stroud and Caleb in primetime. But D'Amico Ryans has that defense. You know, it's going to be a unit. Danielle Hunter joining Will Anderson. Their secondary has 4 first rounders and 4 second rounders and a third rounder. I mean, that's pedigree in the Texans secondary. So early in the year, I also picked because we get to hopefully see healthy versions of these teams. Keenan Allen, yeah. You know, we get to see Keenan, all these guys healthy together. So I get it. Maybe it made more sense to later in the year. We'll see Caleb Williams more, you know, seasoned and whatnot. But man, I just wanted right away in primetime week 2 in Houston and that should be a fun one. But your Bears in general are projected to have one of the easier schedules in 2024.
Yeah, that's pretty, man, that is early in the season for, like, kind of a graduate level matchup, right? And I'm with you, by the way, on Houston's defense. I was just going through the ranks the other day, and I bumped them up into the top 5. Like, there's not a glaring weakness. We're wrong about defenses for fantasy purposes all the time, right? Because it's driven by turnovers and touchdowns and things that are really, really hard to foresee. But, man, they look really, really good on paper. What do you, when you're dealing with a team that like the Bears, like a handful of other franchises entering this season, where like a whole bunch of stuff is new, and you want to be enthusiastic, but like, what's do you have a rule of thumb about how long you intend to give a team like that before you say, maybe it's really not working?
Now, every situation is different, but I mean, this is the best situation probably ever. The top pick has entered.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen, I know he's injury prone on the downside of his career, but he ranked like first in open score last year in ESPN's open score still. And Odunze, I mean, great separator and the best contested catch rate ever in a college season. And obviously, DJ Moore was a star with Justin Fields as his quarterback last season. So this could really be special setup. And yeah, I'm a little concerned about Waldron. Are you there? I mean, I'm trying to say not worry about, you know, JSN last year with Odunze, but I don't, you know, I'm not super pumped with the OC there. But I think the setup there is just so good. And the Bears defense was great down the stretch. Mm-hmm. I know it pains me, and it really, I'm reluctant to do this with you as the podcast host today, but I mean, I might have the Bears winning that division. I'm going to have them in the playoffs. That's a really, really good team. I mean, they're set up. I'm not trying to jinx you, but I like where they're set up. And Caleb does not have to be a star right away.
Right.
As much as I loved Justin Fields, a fantasy player, that offense was so crippled by those sacks. And
yeah,
I mean, Caleb Williams could be, you know, he just the worst year of his career and still be better than the quarterback they've been getting previously.
Yeah, I'm not gonna park this entirely on the Bears, I promise. But I do just want to say, like, because I have also recently gone through the exercise of sort of forecasting out the entire league, like all the skill players, and it is really hard to not immediately have Caleb Williams setting franchise records, right? Because like you go through and you think that you're giving fairly conservative forecasts for like all these pass catchers, right? Like I can give DJ Moore 1,100 yards, which is a step down from what he did last year. Probably bumps him into the teens, maybe in the ranks, right? It's more like what he was doing in Carolina. And then I can give Keenan 900 yards, which is like 300 less than he had last year. Let's say Odunze comes in with only like 800. Let's give, you know, Cole Kmet, he can take a step back. It's like 600 yards. We'll give Gerald Everett 400, 450. Right there, five guys, Caleb Williams has already set the franchise single season passing record, right? Like that's how low it is. And we haven't even gotten to, you know, DeAndre Swift. We haven't gotten to any of the supporting receivers. So there's a path for Caleb to not even be great in year one. And he still gives us like 4,300 yards, 4,400 yards, which, you know, you can modern NFL, you can have a kind of bad year and still throw like for that many yards. And it would destroy this franchise's, single season passing record. But again, I'm not just going to like make this whole thing about the Bears, but I do just for one more question, I want to stick in the division because I actually find the Vikings situation, you know, you mentioned we rarely see a rookie quarterback step into a situation as talent rich as the one in Chicago. Man, we rarely see it like we're seeing it in Minnesota either, right? So JJ McCarthy, I guess the question is, what is the maybe the answer is week one, but when are we likely to see him? What is the early season matchup that we are most excited about for the Vikings and for McCarthy? And you can, you know, maybe you've got some lingering Niners loyalty to Sam Darnold and you just want to tell us that he's going to run away with the job for the full year. That's a possibility. But I am super interested in Minnesota and when we see McCarthy and what exactly, you know, you don't have to tie this to a game. You can just tell me what you think of the offense in general. They've got a transcendent receiver in Jefferson. They've got Jordan Addison, who showed us a lot last year. Eventually they get Hawk back. Like, this is a really fun offense. What does it look like with McCarthy and when do you think we get him?
Yeah, my initial ranks, I treated it as McCarthy was going to start right away. A good situation I put up, you know, last year, even when Cousins was out, our guy, Nick Mullins, put up some big numbers. They're really high pass rate. But after going through this exercise,
I love Minnesota, you call him our guy, by the way. Of course, he's your guy. If he's anybody's guy in the entire industry, he's your guy.
I need to appreciate that. The second most passing yards through 16 starts in NFL history behind only Andrew Luck, Nick Mullins. So the Vikings conversely project, then your Bears, they project to have one of the league's five toughest schedules, though. So after going through this exercise, I'm now leaning toward McCarthy not starting until week 7 at home against Detroit. Their first five games are tough. They start out at the Giants, but then the Niners, aforementioned Texans, at Green Bay. Then they travel to England to face the Jets defense, which, you know, might be the best in the league, before a week six bye. So, I mean, it kind of sets up perfectly to come back from England. You know, it's that bye to have McCarthy at home against the Lions. And Sam Darnold, you know, is competent enough to, if he can stay healthy for that many games, to hold him off that long. And then TJ Hawkinson may even debut after the bye right there. So I'm pointing to week seven at home versus Detroit after a tough schedule and then a trip overseas and then a bye, I think actually might be the more likely scenario for McCarthy, but we'll obviously know far more come August when the pads, you know, when they get going in August.
That's also a pretty classic story too, when we have a team with a reliable enough bridge quarterback, veteran quarterback, and we've got a rookie who isn't necessarily somebody who was taken first overall, second overall, right? Especially when we have a relatively early season bye, that is a pretty traditional pass. So I that might cause me actually to revisit the rank on McCarthy, because I initially had him ranked as if, man, we're just going to see this guy. If it's not week one, it's going to be really, really soon. I think he can drive an NFL offense right now. And I think he was making throws in college. And I think they were asked, you know, it wasn't high volume passing attack. I spoke about this with Harmon previously, but man, some of the basic throws in Michigan's offense, some of the stuff that they were asking him to do, those are NFL throws. So we know he can get the ball downfield. We know he can get the ball downfield into tight spaces. And I think he's going to be really good down the road. Let's move from the current Vikings offense to the guy who led last year's Vikings offense, at least for half the season. When are we going to definitively know that Kirk Cousins has fixed everything that was broken in Atlanta? We just have a lot, you know, it's a little bit like the Bears. It's not exactly like the Bears, but man, we got a lot of new stuff in Atlanta right now. The quarterback, the head coach, Zach Robinson, the OC from the McVay tree. How are we feeling about that? And what is the game that you're looking for on Atlanta's schedule?
So Atlanta opens with four of its first five games at home. They project to have by far the easiest schedule this year. In fact, using market implied ratings, Atlanta's opponents are equivalent to the 22nd rated team on average each week. They don't have to travel much. I will point to the obvious one here, week 14 at Minnesota, the revenge game. I mean, how do we not go Kirk back to Minnesota here? I spoke about it with Harmon, but I'm super high on Drake London through two seasons. He's been targeted on 25% of his routes. That's the wide receiver 16, but he's run just 27 routes per game. That's a wide receiver 70. Cousins will provide 10 more catchable passes per game. And you brought this up. I was reluctant to give you praise, but I did. But the comparison of London and Garrett Wilson was great, only that London has a higher yards per route run and higher target rate per route run through 2 years than Garrett Wilson. So I love London this year, ranking him obscenely, you know, irresponsibly high. And then Bijan Robinson, a final note on the Falcons in the fantasy playoffs at Las Vegas, at home against the Giants, at Washington. So that looks pretty favorable for our guy Bijan there in the fantasy playoffs. So it's a great, great, great looking schedule for all these Falcons. And you love that I brought this up too. I know that Penix was a weird pick, but they didn't add competition to Pitts and London and Bijan. So with Cousins there, and this setup looks absolutely arrow up in fantasy terms.
Yeah, it does kind of have the look of the traditional Kirk Cousins situation, right? Where we think everything's just going to be funneled to like three guys. And that, you know, that was part of the success in Minnesota, right? Like we knew where the stats were going. This isn't like a Green Bay situation. It's not, you know, it's not the old Saints offense with Drew Brees, where we didn't know who was going to go off in any given week. We can reliably, I think, say that it's going to be all three, or at least like two of the three in any given week. And there's no, you know, I'm thank you, by the way, for acknowledging the Garrett Wilson comparison, but I really think there's something there. Like I don't know that there's that much difference between those two players. And I think that we should be thinking of them in similar ways, because man, no, I mean, okay, fine. Zach Wilson, that was bad. That was a bit of a show, but the Atlanta situation was horrendous, was absolutely horrendous these last 2 years. And this is about as big of an upgrade as you can get at the quarterback position. It's very similar to what we're going to see in New York. So I do kind of think that we should think of those two similarly. Where do you have, okay, so you're recklessly aggressive on London. Where do you have Kyle Pitts?
Kyle Pitts. Okay, there, I have him seventh behind my guy Kittle. I could see him going six. I could consider going over Kittle six, but I can't see that top five is pretty locked in my opinion. We'll talk about one guy next, but I don't know. It seems reckless to rank him over Mark Andrews at this point. I love McBride, Laporta, Kelce. You know what I mean? So, no, I'm not going higher than that. By the way, they have so much in common, Wilson and London, right down to aging quarterbacks returning from Achilles tears too. So there's that. But yeah, Pitts, I'm not as reckless as you would expect there, because the tight end, man, it really does look better than ever.
No, it is pretty locked in the top five. I agree with you there. If anybody is going to sneak into that top five, though, it is either Pitts or it's the guy that I think you want to talk to next, because you know, because you've seen the show rundown, who I want to talk about next, and it's Buffalo. And my question is, and this kind of plays into a conversation that I was having with Harmon the last time I was on the pod. How quickly are we going to understand the receiving hierarchy for Buffalo in this like post Stephon Diggs era, right? And when will we know everyone's role? Because one of the things that I think is just wild about Buffalo's receiving core right now, and they're all good, we like them all, but like Dalton Kincaid was mostly a slot guy last year. I mean, that's where he spent most of his time. Curtis Samuel, mostly a slot receiver last year. Khalil Shakir. But fun fact about Khalil Shakir, literally had the highest passer rating when targeted in the league, but he was mostly a slot receiver last year. And the work that Harmon has done, Keon Coleman, that type of player, that archetype, does best as a big slot. So like, okay, if we're counting, I'm up to four slot receivers and nobody outside. I think we all assume that Keon Coleman is going to be like that boundary guy, which maybe that's not his best fit. Anyway, when are we going to understand exactly what this receiving core looks like? And is it going to be one of those like spin the wheel situations, or do you think we'll have a reliable number one here?
I think week one at home versus Arizona, we're going to learn right away that Dalton Kincaid is a top three fantasy tight end, if not the number one fantasy tight end this year, courtesy Dwayne McFarlane. Bills targets per route with Stephon Diggs off the field of the last two seasons. James Cook, 31%. It should be noted he had four easy drop touchdowns last year. Dalton Kincaid, 29%. Then no one else over 20%. Shakir, 19%. Knox, 18%. Gabe, Dave, 16%. So, Andy, I ask you, how high is too high to rank my guy Dalton, who, by the way, was named after the goat Dalton from Roadhouse? His parents did. That is a true
thing. Oh, shut up. Is that true?
So, no, that's a real thing. Yes, that is. Yes. So he's the man, the goat Dalton, indisputably from Roadhouse. Kincaid ran 41 routes without Diggs on the field as a rookie. It's equivalent to one game. 12 targets, 9 catches, 139 yards. Diggs and Gabe Davis accounted for 81% of their end zone targets last year, and they're gone. I mean, I get that the red zone was not there for Kincaid, but someone's got to get scored touchdowns. The splits with Knox are there too, but your guy Laporta, so touchdown dependent. Kelce's 34 years old and seen his average depth of target drop 6 straight years. McBride now has Marvin Harrison Jr. to compete for targets. I mean, I have Kincaid right there with those guys. Am I being irresponsible if I rank him 1, 2, or 3?
Oh no, I don't think that's crazy. If we're gonna attack Sam Laporta in any way, I'm gonna stick up for him, even though we're not really talking about the Lions. He did see 120 targets last year, so I don't know that he's his fantasy production down last year. The fact that he finished as the tight end one was related to the fact that he lived in the end zone, but volume was there. Volume was there at a level that Kincaid hasn't seen it yet. But I mean, it's really easy to make the case that he's going to get there, right? Because there's a huge number of targets that have been vacated. And Kincaid actually had I'm looking at his stats right now, 73 catches for 673 yards. If you just finish with a normal touchdown total for a tight end, if you just give us six touchdowns, you're in the top eight. That's a great tight end season. We're starting you every week. He just didn't have the touchdowns last year, right? So if we expect some positive regression there, and there's every reason to think we will, because you've already given some fine stats on the number of end zone or red zone targets that went to receivers who aren't there anymore. It's a great setup for Kincaid. Loved everything about his season. He caught 80% of his targets last year. Super reliable. Again, I think there's some open questions as to the way in which everybody else is used. It's probably Samuel and Coleman outside, but man, this is a green light for Kincaid. And I, it's hard to get him out of your top five. Like I already said, it's pretty locked in top five, and we're talking about Kittle and Andrews and obviously Laporta and Kelsey. It's hard to get Kincaid out of there because we're, I don't know, what's a reasonable target projection? What, 115, 120? That's probably it, right?
I think so, at least with upside for more. I'm settling right now as my tight end three. I can't put him above your guy Laporte, even just to troll you. Although I don't know if it's worth mentioning, but they play a ton of games indoors this year. Great for Goff. I think only three games outdoors, but I believe two of them are during the fantasy playoffs. So weird quirk there for the Lions. And Kelsey, you know, with Rice's issues, it's tough to rank him above Kelsey with Rice's issues, even at that age. So I have him at three, though, ahead of McBride, adding Harrison there. For a while there, I had McBride as my two, but it's whatever it is. Those are really strong tier one for fantasy tight end this year. And Dalton Kincaid joins that group.
Just to stick on tight end for a second, how close do you think it is? How close should we be drafting Kincaid? I'll throw McBride in here too. Kincaid and McBride to Kelsey and Laporta, because I like when you tier this position, I've kind of got Laporta and Kelsey in a tier of their own, but I feel like it's that line for the tier break is sort of drawn in pencil for me, right? I don't consider it the tier break that I might have in years past, when it was just Kelsey alone, and then there was like an open tier, and then there was the next group of tight ends, right? Like this, it feels like Kincaid and McBride could actually be there now. So if the top two guys are going in like round three, when do you think it's appropriate to take the next two?
Yeah, that's as we go through this exercise. Basically, I'm saying that it's all the same tier, but the McBride and Kincaid, yeah, I think have, you know, a 45% chance of doing better than Laporta and Kelsey. Especially Kelsey's age. I mean, of course. I mean, it's 34. So it's the same tier. So if you can get Kincaid, McBride a couple rounds later, that's your smash. Obvious, right there. Boom, for sure. And I'm okay with that, as long as you're not taking any of those guys over Anthony Richardson, of course. But I think that's the route. Those guys right there, yeah. Kincaid, McBride could easily be Laporta, Kelsey. So if you can get them a couple rounds later, that's the move.
Okay, let me give you another question in this division. And I, like, you know, I say that I stay away from the NFL schedule release as much as possible, but I am terminally online, so it's not like I haven't seen any reference to it. And I have already noted that the Jets are apparently like on in primetime almost every week, right? So tell me what the hell the Jets are, and when will we know it? Like, what is the, is it right away? Is it week one that we really get to learn what the Jets are with Aaron Rodgers at this stage of his career? Part of you just wants to say, and when we did the mock draft recap, you know, I was talking a lot about Breece Hall. I don't know what to think about Breece Hall's receiving workload in the year ahead after where it went last year. I don't know that that's what Aaron Rodgers wants to do. I don't know if this is Breece Hall's offense. I don't know if this is, it's probably Aaron Rodgers' offense. I just want to know what the Jets are, how many skill players we're really going to care about in fantasy, and when we're going to really have some questions answered about this team.
Week one, Monday Night Football, Rodgers back home in the Bay Area, close enough to Chico. Right away, week one, I'll be there. And I say that because I consider the Jets Super Bowl contenders. Obviously, barring Rodgers' health and ability to fight off age. But the Jets defense allowed the fewest yards per play last season. Yeah. With horrific quarterback play. That is a harder thing to do when your offense is constantly getting off the field. The Jets had 36 air yards for all of their passing touchdowns combined last year. That's the lowest ever since they started tracking that stuff. They overhauled their offensive line during the offseason. Breece Hall, another year removed from ACL surgery. Garrett Wilson entering his prime. They loaded up in the draft. The Jets are the first team in NFL history to receive 6 primetime games in the first 11 weeks of the season. Their schedule's the easiest 1 through 5, although obviously not week one. There's so many storylines for this Monday night or two. Leonard Floyd tore Rodgers' Achilles on Monday night last year, and he's on the Niners now. The last time these teams met in a season opener, I was at Candlestick. This was like in 1998 with Bill Parcells. Garrison Hurst had one of the greatest runs in NFL history, 96 yards in overtime. The coaching staff, Robert Saleh, among others. The Jets have a legit D. We still haven't seen them with Rodgers. So if they hang with the Niners, or God forbid beat them, we're going to know right away. And briefly on Breece Hall, I'll say this, Andy. I'm closer to moving him number one overall in my ranks than I am number three.
Wow. Okay. That's a take. Give me a projection, you know, since I brought it up the last time I was on the podcast, give me a projection for targets and receptions for Breece Hall this year.
Yeah. Man, I'm in baseball mode now, honestly. I haven't done the projection thing. It's whatever it's going to take to, what'd they give him? 39 touches the last meaningly 18.
Touches in week 18. And I know 37 carries.
He led the league in air yards as a running back as a rookie, I believe. It's just crazy. Didn't Aaron Rodgers throw to his backs? I mean, Aaron Jones, I mean, I don't know. There's a concern there. I feel like that's going to be awesome, even if it's more down the field. I feel like that's a good connection there. But whatever the projection is that he finishes as fantasy's number one running back. That's my projection. I love CMC, and he's obviously the favorite. He's going to go number one in every draft. But he's coming off a 420 touch season at his age, yeah. And Breece Hall is ridiculously sick. And if that offensive line's better and Rodgers stays healthy, to me, that's 50-50 who puts up the most fantasy points.
Yeah, this is one of those situations where I want to be a little bit skeptical about Breece Hall, but also I am aware enough of his talent and potential that I don't want to get too far out over my skis because I'll look ridiculous. I got a great note here from producer Colin in the show doc. He points out that Mike North, NFL VP of broadcast planning, said just on Thursday morning, addressing the issue of the Jets having six primetime games, his quote was, "We feel like the Jets kind of owe us one." For that guy Aaron Rodgers to last four plays was disheartening for many of us. Yeah, it was disheartening because it made a mess of all of the island games and the spotlight games that the Jets got last year. That was a brutal watch. It did no favors to Zach Wilson either. So we'll see. Dalton, do you think? Like, are we drafting Malachi Corley? Like, do we care about receivers outside of Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall?
Probably not, unless Mike Williams is there too. So I'm thinking that's going to be more condensed in their defense outdoors. I don't see a ton of fantasy value on the outside, their tertiary value. But Corley, they are getting hype there. So someone to pay attention to, and say Garrett Wilson gets injured, then suddenly there's added fantasy value there. But I don't think people are going to be too excited about Corley. I know the one highlight the Jets dropped on their social media was literally him catching like a 3-yard screen, which is an interesting
against,
one. But
against no about, coverage. Talking
about these primetime games, Anthony Richardson, I believe the Colts only got one this year. So that is curious. I know it has to do with markets and all that, but that's a weird one. But the NFL will definitely be holding its breath that Rodgers can stay healthy here. I don't know, Hall, 85 catches, 700 yards, something like that.
Oh,
okay, he can do something like that.
Dalton just tosses in that nugget, 85 catches. Dalton just tosses in like a Marshall Faulk projection for Breece Hall immediately before break.
He can do that.
I need a short break to process what Dalton has just given us. So we be right back. All right. Let's do this thing. Let's finish my final five burning questions related to the NFL schedule release. Nobody's more excited for the NFL schedule release than Andy Behrens. I can tell you that right now. Dalton's really getting me fired up. Question number six, and I'm just gonna frame this basically the same way that I did the Jets question. Let's talk about the Chargers under Jim Harbaugh. What the hell are they, and when are we gonna know it? Is it possible for an offense in this era to excel with a receiving room that looks like this? Palmer, Quentin Johnson, Ladd McConkey. Those are our guys. We have a Greg Roman, Jim Harbaugh led offense here. What's it going to look like, and how soon do we know? Do we just know in week one?
2025. That's when we know what we have here in the Chargers, because yeah, I know they're in full rebuild mode here with their quarterback already answered, you know, so it's kind of just like, I mean, they're just putting the pieces together. Obviously Joe Alt looks, you know, they decided there we're building for the future here, passing on neighbors. The Harbaugh is week 12. If you want to write one down, Colin there, I mean, that'll be a fun one, you know, to see the brothers face each other. So on one hand, the Chargers, they have the second easiest schedule, but they must travel the farthest, 26,000 miles compared to just 10,000 by Washington. But they do, and they play only seven games against teams that were predicted to have a winning record. That's the second fewest in the NFL. Jim Harbaugh took a Niners team off 8 straight losing seasons to a 13-3 record his first year. He topped his win total each of his 3 years in San Francisco. But as you mentioned, this roster, highly questionable. Turning to fantasy terms, Justin Herbert, in his 4 years in the league, the Chargers have ranked first in total offensive plays. With Harbaugh and Roman's 49ers, they ranked 31st in offensive plays over that 4 years. So the situational neutral pass rate, 5th, and then Niners, Harbaugh, 25th. That's a problem. When Harbaugh had Andrew Luck for 2 seasons at Stanford, he averaged 22 and 28 passes per game. He did help increase Alex Smith's yards per attempt, man, but Justin Herbert's my QB20. I mean, I don't see it for fantasy this season. Kamani Vidal is basically the only other guy I got for you, a running back that could be interesting eventually there, because the new Chargers coaching staff drafted him and he seems interesting enough. Gus Edwards, his yards per carry could absolutely plummet away from Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, you and I are in the same place on Justin Herbert, and I've seen, you know, I've seen, I don't want to call anybody out, but I've seen analysts who still have Justin Herbert at like QB12, and I don't know how we get there with the...
Especially how loaded quarterback is. I mean, quarterback is great. Right? Like, it's almost like you must play super flex these days. I mean, it's... Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is my 18th. I mean, what? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy. I cannot see... The only guy I have over him that's questionable is McCarthy, who may not start, Herbert. I cannot see an argument for any... to have Herbert above your QB19 at all. I'd love to see an argument over, like... Goff, Cousins, Rodgers, even Tua. I know the touchdowns weren't there, but that's gonna regress. I mean, he led the league in passing, so yeah. No thanks with Herbert.
Yeah, it's tough with McCarthy too, because as soon as he plays, he's throwing a Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, right? And Justin Herbert is still stuck in this situation. Interesting. My other Chargers question for you was going to be in the backfield. So you're in on the 6th rounder, Vidal, over Gus, you know, because they're running it back with like the old Ravens backfield of Dobbins and Gus Edwards. So you're out on those guys, and you're just in on Vidal. I just drafted him last night in a way too early league that we're actually going to play out. So I like to hear some encouraging information on Vidal.
Oh, my fantasy season would have been quite different last year if not for Dobbins' injury. I'm convinced he would have been top 5 fantasy back last year. But I'm not prepared to go that route coming from the Achilles tear. It's been bad history there. Gus Edwards, again, I think his yards per carry, he's going to hate life without Lamar Jackson. And he's, you know, old and plodder, the definition of a replaceable back. I have no opinion about Vidal. I'm not a big college tape watcher, but like I said, the LA coaches like him and he's got the fresh legs and maybe he gets the job in the second half. Hope I'm wrong about Dobbins, you know, and he returns healthy. I really do. But that's just a tough one to return from.
Yeah.
But man, this is ugly offense, man. Quentin Johnston, are you excited about? Ladd McConkey, people will be drafting. But this is not, they get to play indoors, but this is a slow offense with one of the most depleted rosters in fantasy terms. We're just, you know, looking for the future here.
They passed on so many. They passed on so many receiving options with that top pick too. Pretty crazy. Let's pivot to the Giants. Not that this is some fantasy powerhouse. I don't need the Giants' offense to be great. I don't need it to be good or even league average. And I don't really have like a personal interest in Daniel Jones being a thing. Because there's plenty of quarterbacks to go around. But I would like this team to produce a viable receiver. Can it be Malik Nabers? And I would like a viable fantasy running back out of this mix. So how soon will we know if things are really better for New York?
I picked week 2 at Washington. Hopefully Daniel Jones hasn't suffered an injury by then. And I did it because Washington, you know, has allowed by far the most schedule adjusted fantasy points to opposing wideouts last year. 5th most to running backs. Jaden Daniels could have that offense shaky early on. So, you know, it could be a nice setup for the Giants here. Devin Singletary can be a flex with the help of volume. And then Malik Nabers. Harmon said I had him too high, but he's my wide receiver 17. I just think the volume is going to be there. And this guy's an absolute beast who probably would have been the number one, you know, receiver off the board in most drafts, if not for Harrison this year. So, and I know it's not the greatest setup by any means, but boy, is he just going to absorb targets. I mean, I look at the other receivers there and I'm like, I like Nabers' upside more. So I'm drafting him as a top 20 wideout as a rookie.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that. And I don't think I actually have him in the top 20, but it's not that difficult to see the path because it is very difficult to project out a season and give him 17 games and not give him 135 or 140 targets. Like, I don't see any reason why, other than efficiency of the offense and overall production of the offense, I don't see much of a reason why he should be very far behind Marvin Harrison Jr. in terms of total targets, right? Like, no other rookie is stepping into a situation that's quite that ripe. Also, I just want to underscore that Devin Singletary was a wild winner of the offseason, right? I just assumed all along, and in the earliest iteration of my fantasy ranks, I had Singletary pretty well buried, because I was just assuming, oh, of course the Giants are going to draft a running back. They're not going to hand Devin Singletary like 330 touches or 350 or whatever this is looking like. But it is very much looking like that now. So I think maybe we can trust him. He was awfully good for Houston last year. I don't want to belabor the point any longer. I want to finally get to the quarterback that I feel like you've been itching to talk about. So I want to talk about Anthony Richardson. Indianapolis, like, what you know, this whole draft, we saw the Panthers do great things for Bryce Young and really build up around him. We saw the Bears do a lot of favors for Caleb Williams in the draft. I don't know that there was a quarterback whose team did more for them in the draft, actually, than Richardson, right? They use four of their first five picks on a couple of offensive linemen and a couple of pretty talented receivers. So they've beefed up the receiving room. We think that offensive line is better. Like, Richardson, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like Richardson only actually finished one game last year, right? And ended up with seven combined touchdowns. I thought that some of the stuff that Shane Steichen's team was showing us early in the season was, man, that was really friendly. They really leaned into what Richardson was ready to do well in the NFL. And I thought that thing was going to look great. And I know you're bullish on Richardson. So tell me, at what point, again, maybe it's week one, maybe it's week two, when can we really feel good about this Colts offense, and when will we know if they've really leveled up?
We already know he's the truth. So the question is just, can he stay healthy? I will go week 11 at the Jets, Sunday night football. That's going to be a fun one. I believe that's the only Colts primetime game. Jets have an awesome defense, and hopefully he's healthy, you know, 11 weeks into the year. But yeah, quick AR diatribe. Fantasy points per dropback is the best metric at predicting a quarterback's fantasy points per game the following season. Richardson just had the best mark in the past five seasons, better than career years of Hurts and Allen. His averages per four quarters was 29.9 fantasy points, 55 rushing yards, 7 designed rush attempts. I mean, he was on pace for the league high in designed carries. His pressure to sack rate was awesome throughout college. Yes, I get that was a small sample in which he continuously got hurt. But now he has a whole year to learn the system, which Steichen's talking about. Mm-hmm. He's totally processing it more. And he was good decent as a passer as a rookie. They added A.D. Mitchell. Josh Downs could be really, really good. And now he's year two. Michael Pittman is a star, according to Reception Perception. This offensive line is top three. AR is going to be a better passer year two. Steichen factor is so huge, just dating back to all the quarterbacks he makes fantasy stars. The Colts were top five in plays per game in the four games Richardson played last year. Richardson's younger than Caleb Williams. I mean, put differently, here's the deal. I'd easily bet Richardson versus any quarterback in fantasy points per game. Easily, if anyone wants to take that bet. So it's just a bet on or against health. And Jalen Hurts is always battling injuries down the stretch. Some unreported, dating 3-4 years ago, he's constantly battling injuries himself. He's the QB 16 without the tush-push touchdowns last year, and they lost Jason Kelsey. Here are Josh Allen's splits without Stephon Diggs. Passing touchdowns per game dropped from 2.1 to 1.1. Yards per attempt, 7.6 to 6.4. Passing yards, 265 to 183 without Diggs. I know there's noise in that, and some of that was Allen being a younger quarterback, but he's lost his best offensive player. Colts have the easiest schedule down the stretch. Number one, Anthony Richardson. Same as my rank on Anthony Richardson, my number one QB.
Okay. He's actually your QB one right now. I love it.
No, they clipped the last pod with Harmon saying that I'm really tempted to move it there. And I said, I'm not going to be a coward. So I did. Go to my ranks right now. Anthony, I'm not drafting any of these guys higher, even at the same round. I'm just not going to do it. I'd rather Richardson on my team.
Yeah, no, I love it. He's been a target of mine as well. In the magazine draft that I had last night, took him. He's my quarterback. I'm really excited about this season. Again, love what they did. A couple things that you said that I want to underscore. Well, at least one main point. Josh Downs, that guy could catch 90 balls. I think that's very much in play. He played through injury last year, aggravated the injury at the halfway point, still had a super productive first season. Man, that guy like, lives in the slot, right? Instantaneously open. If it's not 90, it's going to be 80. He's going to be kind of a gift in PPR, and he's sort of an afterthought in draft. So I really like him. Before we dismiss the Colts, I want to get your thoughts on Jonathan Taylor. Like how much, because Anthony Richardson is very clearly the kind of rushing quarterback who is also going to take some goal line work, right? Like we saw that in the limited doses last year. He's not the Lamar Jackson type who's going to do all his running basically between the 20s and let somebody else score the touchdowns. How much does Richardson help or hurt Jonathan Taylor fantasy wise?
Quick note on Josh Downs. Jacob Gibbs found that basically he led the league in accounting for the highest percentage of his plays that didn't come from a first read or a design target. Like up there with CeeDee Lamb and Puka Nacua, he really can get open off script, yeah, which really could help Anthony Richardson here. Jonathan Taylor, I think, is one of the best real life backs in football, better than he showed last year. And the Richardson factor does make me lower him below McCaffrey, Hall, and Bijan, but he's my RB4. Right, you know, Gibbs right after him. And then I think it gets interesting. I like Henry, but I think, you know, right there, CMC, Hall, Bijan, and Taylor. And if you want to throw Gibbs in there, I think we're kind of settling into a pretty clear top five of backs, it feels like.
Okay, we're in the same place on those guys, and I think we're in the same place on Taylor. Let me get to my ninth question here. And it is about Miami's backfield. I feel like this is one of the big open questions in drafts because I've already seen ferocious takes on either side of the Raheem Mostert, Devon Achane situation. Like that team gave us a couple of two difference making backs last year, right? Like Raheem Mostert, right up until the late season injury, was one of the absolute right answers in fantasy, one of the decisive players in the game. And before his mid-year injury, Achane looked like an absolute cheat code, right? He was the most efficient player. Like he was on a Jamal Charles roll, basically the most efficient back that we had ever seen over a protracted period. Super productive. And he was doing it with Mostert also producing simultaneously. That's probably not something that we can just project forward and assume that that's going to continue for another full season. So talk to me about those two backs, who you think the better value is, where you think they should be drafted, whether the incoming rookie Jalen Wright is going to matter at all for fantasy. Maybe he will. Some people are excited about him. And when do you think we'll have a clear picture of that backfield?
Yeah, so when I was talking about Tua's regression earlier, what I meant was with all those yards will result in more touchdown passes next year because the Dolphins running backs took them all last season. I mean, I believe they were tied with the Niners with scoring touchdowns by their running backs. So it was a great year in fantasy. We'll continue to, you know, in that system. So Achane feels like a guy I normally would be all over, but man, there's durability risk there. Given his durability issues and Mostert's age, I expect all three to put up top five fantasy back weeks this season, including the rookie Wright. So what I want to talk about specifically with them is just there's some splits with the Dolphins here. Can they hold up later in the season? That's been the issue. In September, November, they've been scoring 28 points per game. December, January drops to 22 over the last 2 years. This year, they end the year at Green Bay and Thanksgiving, the Jets at Houston, the Niners at Cleveland, and at the Jets. I mean, that is they have the second easiest stretch weeks 1 through 12, second toughest stretch week 13 on. So I'm picking week 17 at Cleveland. Wouldn't that be fun to see Tua play in cyclone weather? the Browns had huge splits last year at home. I mean, just gigantic, but they allowed just 3.7 yards per play at home defensively, like nearly a whole yard fewer than the next closest. So one other note from Warren Sharp, the Dolphins went 10-1 versus teams that missed the playoffs last year, 1-5 against playoff teams, outscored by 15 points per game. This year, they play 10 teams that finished over 500 last year, 9 of which expected to post winning seasons this year. So going to be a tough second half for this Dolphins team. A lot of outdoor cold weather. And this is the team that hasn't been able to hold up as is.
So it sounds like maybe you're not fully buying this best shape of his life, fully beefed up version of Devon Achane? Because I like Achane coming into the league was a major worry for me, because we just don't see a lot of players who are that small, who really hold up to a full workload. Not that they were, you know, there were only a couple weeks where they really gave him like heavy usage. But if he settles in as like a 12 to 14 touch player, he's obviously he's put on some weight. He's put on some muscle. This is this is probably the first offseason that he's had where he didn't also have to train for track and field, right? So he's putting on weight. You're not buying that at all. You're not a best shape of his life guy.
Oh, I'm not putting anything past him. I mean, he has the upside to be the number one fantasy player this year, without question. It's just a risk if you're taking him. I mean, some leagues he's going mid second round, you know, and you're talking about a 12 touch per game guy. But I will not fault anyone for taking Achane. You want to take him number one overall, I'd be like, props for you know, getting your guy. So but I mean, probably not going to be on a ton of my teams where he's going, though, which is different than my normal drafting style, because I'm all boom bust. But man, I don't know. There's a lot of risk here.
Nobody respects a hot take like Dalton Del Don. I appreciate it. Okay, last question. And this one should be pretty easy. This is actually this I think is one of the most difficult receiving rooms to talk about for obvious reasons, for legal reasons. Kansas City. When do you think, and we can set aside the Rashee Rice situation because it's just unknowable to the two of us, and neither Dalton Del Don or Andy Behrens are people that you should be taking legal advice from, and you shouldn't listen to us on suspension or legal matters. We just don't know yet. So we can set aside the Rice situation and just talk about Kansas City's receiving core. When do you think we're going to be able to confidently arrange the key players in that receiving room? And really, this is a question about the rookie Xavier Worthy, right? We know he's got blinding speed. He's like the fast guy in the history of the combine. Some of the numbers on him as an actual like downfield threat in college, not particularly impressive. But it is also really easy to imagine them throwing him into, you know, some of the really short range stuff that they were asking of Kadarius Toney, of Mecole Hardman. He's even faster than those guys. Those guys were obviously have been unreliable players during their tenure in Kansas City. There, you know, I've made the argument before that there was no decision worse. There was no play worse in football last year than a pass attempt to Sky Moore. He was pretty brutal. So like, if all that stuff goes to Worthy, what are we looking at? And then how quickly do we think we're going to learn this?
All right. Well, we're going to learn it week 7 at San Francisco against 49ers. Mm. Yes, a homer pick, of course, an excuse to talk about the Niners. But truthfully, their opponents are always among the league leaders in pass rate against. So if you want to see, go there looking at the receivers here. How is this game not in prime time? Come on. Yeah. I think it's only like the 8th Super Bowl rematch, although the second year in a row we've had one. Maybe the Chiefs can recover 6 of 7 fumbles again. The 49ers have the third worst rest difference versus opponents since 2002, which probably means ever since they started recording this. And I hope you're sitting down. The Chiefs will be coming off a bye in this game, as every opponent seemingly will be against the Niners. I also picked this because Rashee Rice, you know, over under 6 games suspended, you know, give or take somewhere around week 7, maybe. I don't know. Anyone's guess there. Could be less, could be more. As for Worthy, with Rice and limbo, Hollywood Brown so injury prone, Kelsey's age, there's a path to like top 15 fantasy upside here if you squint in the final month of the year or something. So definitely exciting guy with crazy speed. You look deeper into his deep ball numbers in college. They can get a pass because he had like the most inaccurate quarterback too. So upside's huge given it's Patrick Mahomes now. I mean, you're going to be all over him in Dynasty. And then Isaiah Pacheco. I believe I took Jacobs over him in the magazine mock we did together, and then you took Pacheco, and I regret that, and I've changed my rank since then. Look at Pacheco's, if they don't bring back McKinnon, I mean, if he's become Patrick Mahomes' receiving down back, he's right there in the conversation after those big 5 with Derrick Henry, Barkley, Kyren Williams, and then you're right there, Pacheco, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I've actually, you know, I think I'm kind of on Pacheco Island right now, but I've got him as like my RB6. I don't, you know, we talk about, you know, we've mentioned a couple of other big offseason winners. he's about as big as it gets, right? Like they have yet to add any meaningful competition for him, and they were riding him down the stretch last year. Like it's not like he was breaking off, you know, 200 yard game after 200 yard game, but he's thrilling to watch. It is a high scoring team. It is an offense that is presumably going to be better. And I don't know if McKinnon's even going to change that much for me if they re-sign him, because that, we're not talking about a ton of touches there. I think Pacheco is going to be, I don't know, as long as he stays healthy, through training camp, through the preseason, I don't really see a way that I'm not going to have him on like 70% of my rosters, unless the rest of the industry just lifts, the rank on him, because he just looks like a filthy steal for me right now.
Yeah. If my guy CEH is the main competition, that's about as good as it gets as far as competition for touches.
You're still claiming CEH is your guy?
No, I'm just admitting that in the back, in the past, he has been. No. That's my saying. It's the least competition in the league if he's your guy. Weeks 1 through 10, his target percentage was 9%. His route percentage nearly doubled the second half of the year. So yeah, big difference there without McKinnon. And as you're saying, maybe he's not even a difference maker this stage of his career if he does return. So I'm with you, Andy. I like you're even more aggressive. The lead back in Mahomes' offense with a ton of questions as the receivers. I mean, it's really a sneaky chance to be a top five fantasy back.
Yeah, people should know, by the way, if they've, you know, listened to me at all over the years, I love Josh Jacobs, and I've still got Pacheco over him. I just think the situation is too ripe. It's too good. I think we did it. I think we answered all of the biggest burning questions. I think we sorted it out for the people. Like, if I had to talk about the NFL schedule release, I'm glad it was with you, Dalton. This was a pleasure to reunite, to, I don't know, figure out some NFL stuff.
It was a pleasure, Andy. Well done as the host, and great talking ball with you. Thank you for putting up with this. I know it was a real struggle for you.
I mean, they're paying me. I got to do it. Apparently, Colin can assign me work. So here I am, but I feel like he owes me for this. That is going to do it for today. Still can't believe that they made me pretend that the NFL schedule release is a real thing. Matt Harmon is going to be back from vacation and debuting a new miniseries on the pod very soon. So you're not going to want to miss that. Until then, we are out.